expecting heavy downpours all day today.
You're a builder. You build. It's literally in your job title.
Woo! Let's hit it.
A little rain isn't stopping you. Not today, not any day. Shouldn't your flashing tape be working through it all too? Only Frog Tape Pro Grade Flashing Tape's high-performance acrylic adhesive sticks, re-sticks, and stays stuck, even on the roughest surfaces in rain, snow, heat, and more. So you stay in control when it matters most. Show weather who's boss with Frog Tape Pro Grade Flashing Tape.
I am your host, or one of your three hosts here for Chilluminati Podcast, episode 24, I believe, and as always,
episode 103.
Yeah, we're just that far into the future. I am, as always, joined by my other two hosts, the sir, the wonderful, the beautiful Jesse Cox.
I didn't know where you're going with that. I'm glad I'm the beautiful one.
I didn't either. I'm trying to brush up on my improv skills, man.
Both Alex and I leaned in. Like, go on. And you're like, Jesse. I was like, it's like I won a rose. I'm very excited. Thank you.
And as always, the forever relaxed, chilled, wonderfully loving man, Alex Fasciane.
Yeah, I'll take it. Yeah, that sounds good.
You're a good
if that's
boy.
My brand, if that's the brand that I'm putting out there, so be it.
I'd like to think that's the brand you put out there. Loving, relaxed.
Yeah.
You always, what do they call the kids say? You always vibing?
Yeah, those are my two adjectives.
Right.
Loving and relaxed.
Right. Loving and relaxed is the two that you would use.
I've been called sensual.
Sensual? You know, I think sensual fits you rather nicely.
I don't. At all.
You don't think Alex is
sensual
bone
like
in
his
being?
Body? No.
Are you skeptical?
Are you skeptical of everything?
Yeah. Until proven, until he sensualizes up on me, not sensual.
Ooh,
there's a lot of love to go around there. That's like
ooh,
a sensual beard. You
challenge
can like
accepted.
Nuzzle up into his like gorgeous Alex beard. It looks soft. It looks like it'd be a nice soft place to lay my head.
It's wiry. Let's say that. I'll say that.
Why? Why did it's I why... think for some reason you were gonna say it looks like a nice soft place to lay my eggs? I don't know.
I was expecting it.
Like, yeah, of course.
I can't give away my alien origins yet. It's too early.
Oh well.
For that.
Yo, speaking of alien origins, we watched Jupiter Ascending last night.
Holy
I have heard nothing but bizarre shit about that
movie. I don't know if you know this, but this movie is like kind of in line with our Chilluminati like alien lore.
Oh, really? What lore are they using?
It's kind of like The Matrix, except it's like there's like humans are from another planet far away, and we're just like a farm for them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there's grays basically in the movie. It's crazy. You should watch it. It's
what
it's
all the different races work together. Like there's grays and there's lizard men. Here's all you need to know. This is the sum of the entire movie.
Already know it's fiction. Grays and lizard men would never work together.
Well, that's because they're all ruled by a guy who is basically Voldemort, question mark. All I need to know is Channing Tatum wears elf ears and flies around on space roller skates. There's a literal scene where the man is skating through the skyline of Chicago as jet fighters are trying to kill him. It's crazy. It's crazy.
That's anyway. The Jupiter Ascending. Who is the director? Is that the Wachowskis or am I thinking of something
else? Yeah.
The Wachowskis.
Yeah.
That was
yes.
The Wachowskis one. All right. Yeah, I've never seen that movie.
Take time.
I thought of
Watch
you when
it.
We watched it.
Thank you for keeping me in your heart and your mind, sir.
There was a lot of times Alex was just rubbing his eyes in disbelief.
That movie was crazy, man. That movie was insane.
Now, for those where it's legal, is this like you watch it sober? Or would you more enjoy watching it under the influence of something if you're of the age and it's legal?
I wouldn't say it's a good movie,
all right.
Period. Mm-mm. But like, yeah, in the way that weed makes everything better, like
you heard it here.
Go for it.
Chilluminati branded weed one day.
Dude,
10 years from now.
Chilluminati OG, let's go.
Let's go.
Who's that brave entrepreneur who wants to take the plunge?
Somebody in my Discord the other day said they wanted a weed delivery service called Drug Hub. Instead of
Drug Hub?
I said that's like $1 million idea. Just somebody needs to
it.
Take
already
it.
Exists, especially here in LA.
Does it already exist?
Yeah.
Well, then you can't take that brand name.
Yeah, Alex, are you literally Googling the rights to Drug Up?
Drug Up? Hold on.
That's hold what I'm on saying, now.
Right? Genius, genius. Well, while he's looking up the rights to drughub.com, and he'll probably end up getting drughub.ru, something we forgot to mention last episode. Last episode marked our 1 year anniversary, boys.
What?
Oh, my yeah. goodness.
What?
1 year. 1 year of doing Chilluminati. We hit the average of one episode every 2 weeks. We had like 24 episodes go live, including the mini stuff. And it's just a fun little thing to think about. That's already been a year of us talking about weird and mean and evil shit.
Look at us. Great.
But today is a day where we re-dive into what we talked about last week. Now, we kind of covered the basics of it last week, what Missing 401 is, the kind of the criteria that they kind of need to fit in order to fall into those mysterious missing people's cases. We read a couple of them, though I firmly believe the ones that we read last one had enough excuses beyond, you know, something bizarre going.
Yeah, if you haven't listened to the last episode, you should go listen to it, because it covers a lot of what we're talking about.
Yeah. Because we're not going to talk about any of that stuff really heavily today. I handpicked two of my favorite cases from the book, The Missing 401 from the West Coast. One takes place in the Yukon territories up in Canada, and the other one takes place in California. I figure that's a nice little tie-in for YouTube boys who live out that way. These are ones that I think there's not really enough information to pinpoint or really have a solid theory as to what happened. So hopefully at least one of these cases will have Jesse at least curious and confused. I'm not saying he's going to believe that an alien mastermind is in the forest hunting us down one by one, but it's still a curious case nonetheless.
I'm down to be confused.
All right.
I just don't want to be told why things happen when it's BS.
Well, I gave you theories. I never told you why.
Right, but I think that's where my skepticism, where people are like, here's the answer. It's like, how do you know that? You're just making it up.
Well,
I'd rather be like, I don't know. I have no clue. This is great. So yeah, yes, take me away.
That's what's fascinating about Missing 401 is like, there's never really a solid answer. But today, the first case we're going to start with is of a case by the name of, by a man by the name of Bart Schleyer. Bart Schleyer is what I would call the epitome of born for the outdoors. He was born in 1954 in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Bart Schleyer was born into a family of avid outdoors folks and hunters. His father, a physician by the name of Otis, and it's just a damn shame we don't hear Otis as a name anymore these days. That is like an exclusive.
Bart Schleyer is already like a hard one to hear a lot of times in a row.
Yeah, we're just going to go with Bart going from here on out.
Otis Schleyer.
Otis Schleyer. His father was a physician by the name of Otis. He was one such avid hunter, and ever since Bart was a little boy, he had been taking Bart on hunting adventures all across the world through his entire life. And Bart grew to enjoy not just hunting, but wildlife in general. So much so that in 1979, Bart graduated from Montana State University with a master's degree in wildlife biology. His thesis was actually written about bear activity in Yellowstone National Park in an attempt to understand how the bear species reacted when confronted by humans. After graduation, Bart would then work with the Interagency Grizzly Bear Study at MSU, where he graduated from. He dedicated his life to research, and professionals within his career frequently said they knew nobody better than Bart who could study, trap, and track bears.
So he has skills for outside.
This is all to set up like how much this is all he did ever since he was a kid. This is pretty much his life all the way to the point where he ends up going missing. Aside from the interagency bear study, he would also go on to work for the Montana Fish and Game Department, where his job was to set bear trap lines in some of the roughest terrain in the Bob Marshall Wilderness.
The
Bob Marley Wilderness, where you can find OG Chilluminati growing at all times. Yeah. It's a place where you just, you know, lay back and let the smoke take you over.
A Marley Wilderness.
That's where the fog the smoke monster comes from. The Bob Marley
from
Wilderness. From Lost, yeah. Once the bears were trapped, he would then install collars on them, and he'd follow the bears throughout the summer to just study their behaviors. All this to give you, like I said, and like you said, to give you a really good idea at how Bart spent his entire life living, breathing, working, and studying the outdoors, and specifically bears. He was a bear.
Being stuck outside overnight isn't going to take this guy down.
Not even close. Yeah. And we're going to give another example of that here. As an example, Bart once spent days in a cabin by himself, tracking, hiking in mountains, and walking for 12 hours or more where there were no trails before making it back to his cabin every single night. He even had his own exercise regime of push-ups and squats using logs he crafted at home for his own exercising purposes. He was a handy man. He kind of reminds me of that guy from Parks and Rec with the mustache. I can't remember his name, but he does like a lot of woodworking.
Rocco.
Yes,
Rocco.
Yeah. What's his name?
I don't know, it's the guy who's the voice of Rocco, right?
Yeah.
Is he the voice of Rocco? I don't know.
Yeah. Not the one in the short shorts.
What?
Have you ever seen Parks and Rec, Jesse?
Yes.
Do you know who I'm talking about?
You're talking about Parks and Rec. I thought you were talking about Reno 911. I'm sorry.
No. Parks and Recreation. What the man with the mustache. I can't remember his name though.
Yeah, you're talking about Ron Swanson.
Yeah, Ron Swanson. There you go.
We're all here now. We're
there
back.
There we go. That kind of in my mind, that's who this man is.
I was looking up Nick Offerman, just like, hold on. Was he on? Never
mind. 911?
No, I just thought.
Rocco's Modern Life.
Rocco's Modern Life.
I just had to close it. I was on his Wikipedia. Like, hold on. No,
I just
he
heard
did
you
not.
Say Parks and Rec, and for some reason my mind was like, that's the show Reno 911.
same show.
Yeah,
same
I was. Show. I'm sorry. I was still chilling in the Bob Marley wilderness.
That's fine, man. It's a good place to be. I don't blame you. But the point of it is, like, he crafted his own exercising tools for his daily regimens. Bart was a ripped gentleman. At one point, he even moved to Alaska to study taxidermy, which would eventually lead him to Russia to study Siberian tigers, also collaring them, tracking them, and studying them, where he would meet his wife, Tatiana, and they would eventually have a son named, and all our video game boys are going to love this. Guess what they named their son?
Link.
What?
No.
Artyom. Mario.
Artyom.
Artyom.
Artyom. Artyom. Metro.
Sure.
Metro.
Yeah, the main character from Metro. That was the name of his boy, Artyom.
Artyom.
I think
what
you mean Artyom.
Artyom. Yeah. Or if you played Exodus and the guy who's voice acted by Toonami Man, who I never know what his voice.
Steve Bloom.
It might be Steve Bloom. He's from the old Toonami.
Yeah, hey, I'm Steve. I talk like yeah.
He's
I
the only one with an American accent in that.
He's
whole
Spike
game.
Spiegel.
Yeah. Exactly. Anyway. All of that is the exact reason that Bart's disappearance on September of 2004 is very, very strange. On September 14th, 2004, Bart arranged for a float plane to fly him into Reed
Lakes. Wait, time out.
Yes, hello.
The fact that he's good at going out into the woods means that it's strange he disappeared in the woods?
Well, the things surrounding his disappearance when they end up arriving there and what they end up finding is what makes it all very strange.
Okay,
he's basically just saying last time it was like a kid who like got scared of loud noises and was like
sure.
Yeah.
But this time it's a guy who was a woodsman.
Yes, all right. That's all. I'm not saying it's impossible. Obviously, I'm just saying it adds to the weirdness of it.
Okay.
So, on September 14th in 2004, Bart arranged for a float plane to fly him into Reed Lakes. These lakes are about 110 miles east of the Alaskan border, 5 miles west of Klondike Highway, and 10 miles south of McQuesten, Yukon. There are 4 lakes in the Reed Lakes chain, the largest being 1.25 miles long and similarly wide. The lakes are isolated from the highway by a river, and travelers cannot get to the lakes unless flown in, to give you just an idea of the isolation that these lakes kind of impose. On this trip, Bart not only took his tent and supplies, but also an inflatable raft to meander throughout the lakes and explore the area and do his studying.
That sounds so nice.
Just to get away?
Oh my god, yeah.
For a few days? Yeah, man. The peace and quiet of the woods. If the woods didn't scare me, I would go out there alone all the time. But there's just no way. There's just no way in hell. After diving into this hole, there's just absolutely a negative chance in hell that I would ever go out into the woods by myself. No way. It's too easy to get lost, clearly. But so when David, the author of these of the book that I'm pulling a lot of these cases from, actually inquired about the wildlife in the area, he was sent to a man named Rick Fernal, who had over 25 years of experience as a wildlife biologist for the Yukon Territory specifically, which is where Bart went, and that's where Bart ended up going missing. Rick knew about the Bart case and openly wondered why Bart would even go there. The fishing isn't good, and the wildlife was supposedly very sparse. There were many other areas in that similar zone that had some incredible fishing and wildlife that made Reed Lakes look like a terrible place to go, if that's what you're going for. But nonetheless, Bart had gone missing there, so there was where he'd end up searching. Bart had scheduled the float plane to return to pick him back up on September 28th, which was only 2 weeks after he had been dropped off. And when the pilot arrived, what they found was confusing, to say the least. So he'd only been there for 2 weeks total.
Okay.
The first thing they noticed was Bart's tent. It was knocked down, but the pilot was unsure by what. Small explainable detail in my opinion, but still interesting. Weather, wind, anything could have knocked it over, depending on how long ago he ended up going missing.
Yeah, an abandoned campsite is a tough thing to be like, there was a struggle.
Yes, of course. Yeah, in the wilderness especially. Near the tent itself, he found Bart's backpack with bear spray, along with his VHF radio and his knife. Strange to leave these behind if he was going to go on a hike, especially considering his history and what he was prepared for. The pilot continued to search, shouting for Bart, but with no reply. After a bit of searching, the pilot left the area and contacted the RCMP, which is the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, who would later contact his friends thereafter. After having reported him missing, the RCMP, they did a flyby over the Reed Lakes. And then that was literally all they did, which is kind of the first strange thing. They didn't use any... Good old Wallace. We love him.
He's such a sweet boy.
Yeah, he's a sweet, sweet boy. See, it's actually good. Alex could never go missing with Wallace by his side.
If you think except about in it. The wilderness, Wallace would just be like, I'm out. You'd just,
I miss my warm apartment and my couch. Yeah. So the RCMP, all they did was a flyby over Reed Lakes initially, and then that was it. No search teams, no gridded searching or any of that stuff, no FLIR cameras, nothing. They just flew over. That was it. Bart's friends, once they were informed that he went missing, would also go to the site he disappeared at, and the first thing they did after searching the original campsite is they immediately searched going across the lake directly across the lake from where his tent was. Here, they actually found his inflatable boat, which apparently RCMP never found. It's frustrating that the RCMP didn't even check that. That's kind of bizarre that they would do a flyover and they wouldn't even find his inflatable boat literally floating on the other side of the lake that he went missing on. And remember, this lake is only about a mile and a quarter wide and long.
So they find it on the other side of the lake.
Correct. The friends go to the other side of the lake from where the tent was, and there is sitting his inflatable boat, just sitting in the lake right there.
He left his knife?
His knife, his backpack, his bear spray, and his radio back at the campsite.
VHF radio is two-way, right?
I could not tell you. I don't know. I didn't do the research on what a VHF radio, if it's two-way or one-way.
Okay.
But while you Google that, continuing on what they found. So they found the inflatable boat. 60 feet inland from where the boat had been found, they also found a bag full of gear that he had taken. And leaning next to the bag on an adjacent tree was Bart's bow and arrows. All of which, the bag supplies, the bow, the arrows, none of them have been disturbed. Nothing in the bag had been taken out and opened. Everything seemed to have just been left there, like he plopped it down and then that's it. It did look like that he had at least been calling moose in the area from whatever evidence that the friends claim that they have found. That they believe what he did was he went across with the supplies to call moose to possibly study them or what have you.
So they confirmed it's a two-way radio.
Okay, it is a two-way radio.
That would not be something that I would leave my camp with.
Yeah, that seems like kind of a mistake. So the friends, after finding this stuff, they continued searching the area. And not terribly far from that bag and the bows and arrows that they found more evidence of Bart. His camouflage face mask that had a trace amounts of blood on it. And after that, they recontacted the RCMP to return to the scene. And on October 3rd, 2004, just another few days after he had been reported missing, which is just over 2 weeks, the RCMP returned to Yukon and Reed Lakes en masse and performed a grid pattern search in an attempt to find Bart, which in my opinion is super bizarre, like just bizarre in general. And I can't obviously speak for them, but why wasn't that something they had tried to do the first time? Why'd they only do a flyover? And then days later, after the friends found more evidence, that they started to do the grid search. That's really weird. 60 yards from the bow, searchers actually found a skull and a few teeth. They also found a pair of camouflage pants, a camera, and a few small bones. The teeth would then go on to be positively identified as Bart's teeth. So, at the very least, they had found the remains of Bart. Within 2 weeks, he had been reduced to a skull, some teeth, and some small bones.
A month, right? Like, he could have disappeared 5 months. Right.
Earliest he could have disappeared was on the 14th, and this is October 3rd. So, we're still about a week and a half
Not
away
even
from
a month.
Not even a month yet. We're still, like, a little over the 2 weeks, approaching the 3-week point what have you. At this point, most investigators from the search stopped the search and pointed to this being a grizzly bear attack. That the grizzly bear, and that a grizzly bear expert for decades was killed by the one thing he was trained most to look out for, track, and research. Doesn't outrule the fact that he could have been killed by a grizzly bear, but it's also weird that that's the thing that he would have killed him, something that he would have been prepared for, you would think. But there was much more about this that still ended up raising a lot of questions. The area where all of the remains were found was significantly covered with bear and wolf poop. They collected a bunch of samples of the feces and sent it to labs for testing, but when the results returned, there was no clothing or evidence of Bart having been eaten by any of the animals that may have left that scat in the area. Experts say when eating that the animals would not care about the clothing on the person or whatever jewelry he was eating and would eat all of it just as much as they would just eat the person, later usually expelling it, obviously, by shitting. So if a bear or that those bears or whoever left that scat had eaten him, there would have been at least tattered clothing or something in evidence of that poop.
Do you know if it's common for wolves and bears to poop together?
I have no fucking idea. I don't know.
That's so bizarre.
I mean, it might be just a common area where the animals kind of track through because this is a lake, so they're probably coming by to have a drink or something would be my guess.
Right.
You know,
so there's a lot of poop
so there's,
there.
There's still,
never
you know,
meets.
If there's going to be traffic of animals, obviously water bodies of water is where you're going to see most. But they did find Bart's pants lying on the ground near the scene and intact completely as though they had been taken off first, much like the other cases we talked about. Last a couple of weeks ago, where the pants were just removed. Most of the clothing otherwise would never have been found, even after a wide, thorough search of the area.
Interesting. Did you, any word on the weather, by the way?
There was no reports of any storms or bad winds or whatnot. It just seemed like a relatively calm time in the area.
So do you know, like, about how cold that would be?
I don't know. The temperature was actually not brought up
It was August. It was fine.
Yeah, I imagine. Well, September into October, but still, like,
it's fine.
Yeah, it's not going to be crazy.
In North Alaska,
the Yukon Territory of Canada.
Yeah, oh, this okay. isn't. This is. Yeah,
he was bordering
South Alaska, technically.
Yeah, kind of the same thing. So it's going to be cold. But
then
I don't think
kind
it's
of
like.
Touching.
But no, this is still.
Yeah, this is not like sub-freezing, you know, shivering snow. Yeah. There's no snow on the ground hiding tracks or anything like that. There was no snow in the area at the time.
The worst it was probably 45, maybe.
Yeah.
Fahrenheit.
Okay. Furthermore, conservation experts then posited that if the animal, bear otherwise, had been spooked during its kill, it would have hauled the body off and buried it to be eaten later, something we also talked about a couple weeks ago. However, a search looking for any buried caches of food never produced any evidence of any cache or bloody ground from the body being dragged or wounded. Experts also indicated that there was no sign of confrontation in the area where they found his remains or struggle with an animal at all. His bow and arrows were still leaning against the tree that they found. No moss, tundra, or branches were snapped, disturbed, or moved to indicate that he had been dragged off or had fought something. And following, several investigators made statements saying his death is a mystery, and the idea that a bear killed him does not make any sense or correlate with the evidence that was then presented to back that claim. I'm scrolling back up. As far as I'm concerned, though, that's the interesting part as far as the evidence that there was no fight there. They did, however, find one piece of evidence that would still be found toward the end, 60 yards away from his bow. They actually did find Bart's cap and his balaclava that he was wearing at the time. The cap and balaclava had no damage, no blood, and nothing to indicate any fight or attack ever happened. Investigators specifically point out that it's bizarre that the balaclava had no tears, punctures, or blood if he was indeed attacked by an animal like a bear or a wolf, as they typically go for the head and the neck when they're going for their kill. Rick Fernal, the guy that we talked about earlier, the guy that he reached out to, 25 years of experience, calls it the strangest case he's ever seen in over 30 years.
Is there any possible chance this guy was, like, suicidal?
That's actually brought up specifically in the book, and his family and friends said that he was one of the nicest, like, happiest guys ever, and that, you know, they wouldn't. But from somebody who has personally dealt with people who are depressed and stuff like that, sometimes those signs just, it's not obvious.
Your closest friends might not even know.
Exactly.
Well, can I jump in here and poo-poo
on
everything?
That's the gist of this first case, so yes,
great,
please.
Yeah. So, From the Anchorage Daily News, December 19th, 2004, the opening of this headline.
Ooh.
Analysis of bear scat found along the shores of a remote lake in the Yukon Territory has confirmed that experienced Alaskan woodsman and predator scientist Bart Schleiler.
Schleiler. Yep, really?
Was eaten by a grizzly bear. Then, okay. So they found bits of him on the shore. This is December 19th. If you read the article, literally all it says is, we don't know if the bear attacked him or if the bear scavenged him. We don't know, but the bear definitely ate his ass. However, they talked with a bunch of researchers, and one of the guys lays out like a really interesting thing here. He says,
like a potential scenario.
Yeah, he says, because they said, could a bear have actually snuck up on him? And he says, could a bear have snuck up on him? Give me a break. They're quiet. Nobody's above that, even if he's super skilled.
Mm-hmm.
Smith recounted an experience of another knowledgeable hunter and bear researcher studying bears along the Katmai coast several years ago. While the man was watching bears in front of him, another eased up unnoticed within feet behind him. The scientist, Smith said, nearly had a heart attack when he got up to move, turned around, and discovered there was a bear within arm's length. The bear responding, the bear in this case, may have been responding to the fact that he was using a moose call, literally shouting to everyone in the area, hey, I'm a moose, come eat me. And that if a bear was stalking a moose, perhaps he might have even been quieter. So it's not hard to imagine the bear would have killed him.
Pants being off and being there being no blood on his clothes.
Well, even this guy says, at the end, though, we may never know what actually happened, but currently what they do know is that a bear eventually ate him. At some point, a bear ate him. A grizzly bear ate him.
That does fit in line with some of the bones that were found had marks of, like, teeth chips on them to indicate that other animals had at least feasted on his corpse.
Yeah, at some point, what they're saying is, at least
the bear
article,
got to him.
That a bear ate his body, mm-hmm. and then whatever was left, other animals came and ate the rest. So
interesting.
Whatever happened to him, eventually a bear got him. At least that's what the Alaskan Daily News says, or Anchorage Daily News.
The Anchorage Daily.
It's still that, but that's even more interesting to me because of the fact that he didn't have it. Like he didn't have pants on. He didn't have
his
like,
baklava area on his neck. Yeah. Thing was just on the ground. Nothing on that.
And then there's trace blood on his face mask.
His camouflage face mask that he was wearing was the only piece of clothing they found that had any blood, and it was only a tiny, tiny bit.
I mean, I would love to know the area, because in my mind, I doubt he's out in the open, right?
Yeah.
Making moose calls. So I would imagine he had a camo hood on, or like the mask on, and was like hiding in a bush, maybe. And it could, literally, he could have gotten up to go pee. Who knows what could have happened?
Mm-hmm.
He could have like gone to take a shit somewhere.
I mean, like, if he was, I mean, the other kind of weird scenario, if he was hiding, like you said, in a tree or something, what if he like had just had an accident and he fell?
That's another thing they brought up in the article is that it's very possible either he had an accident, fell, hurt himself, and a bear just got him because he was on the ground. And then at that point, a bear can drag you anywhere because you can't fight back.
He could have got robbed even. Like
sure.
He's
somebody else in the area, yeah.
He's somewhere so remote that like even if
Hill
somebody...
people, man, they will get you.
Yeah, I mean, even if somebody did like just like land a plane and like roll up on him, like what could he do? Like, I feel like it's possible that, like, somebody just, like, came and killed him and took off, you know?
I mean, yeah. That's what these are so interesting, because there's so many different scenarios that fit. It's so weird that he didn't have his VHF radio on him, that was left back in camp. The fact that bear spray was left back at the camp, you'd think he'd keep that, and just to be safe, his knife also being left back at the camp, like a melee weapon of defense. You feel like you would have those on them, especially, but, you know... As Darkest Dungeon also said, his confidence is a slow and insidious killer. Maybe he was just too confident in his own abilities. And it was like, I'll be fine.
Very possible. Because, it could have been one of those things where he left some stuff on the other side and he was like, I'm just going to go over there for a minute and do this. Who knows? There's a million possibilities.
Yeah.
But for all the weird stuff that happens in a national park, they're like, could it be aliens? I think this is the most, like, probably just something terrible happened to this guy and it's really unfortunate. That a bear then ate the man. Like that sucks, but I don't think it's, you know, government conspiracy.
It at least confirms that his body was there.
Yes, at the very least. So that leads us into our next missing person, Stacy Arras. I don't know how you say that last name. It's A-R-R-A-S.
That's probably Arras, a good guess. Arras, maybe?
Yeah, Stacey Arras. So Stacey Arras, on July 17th, 1981, she was a 14-year-old girl. Her and her father would join a group of 10 people and a guide for a trip through High Sierra camps on horseback. After a full morning of riding on the first day, the group would stop for lunch at Upper Cathedral Lake before heading out to their first night stop on Sunrise High Sierra Camp, approximately 3 miles southeast of Tenaya Lake, and about 1.5 miles from the Sunrise Lakes.
Where is this? I'm sorry?
This should be California. This is California.
Gotcha.
I believe it's Northern California, but...
Towards the Sierra Nevada mountain.
Yeah, yeah. This trip that they were taking on horseback paralleled Highway 120, about a mile of its southeast. After arriving at the night stop, Stacy had complained that she was feeling achy from riding all day long. So, heading into the cabin that her and her dad were going to be sharing, she would take a shower and then head out for a short hike to stretch her legs a little bit. They were at an elevation of 9,200 feet. This is important because at this elevation, trees are sparse, few and far between, and instead, exposed granite would be what met her. But that meant incredible viewing distance for everybody and great, great, great sightseeing because you have very little in the way to see beyond and see the mountains and forests.
Yeah, it's like a balcony, basically.
Yeah, more or less. You're just looking at absolutely gorgeous terrain. And I'm jealous. I would love to see stuff like that. One of the ones that was also going the trip was by a man by the name of Gerald Stewart, who was 70 years old. He would be going along on this hike with Stacy when she went to go stretch her legs.
Old man did it again.
No. And there's a reason it's not him. Don't worry. It would be a short 1.5 mile hike to Sunrise Lakes where she was going to go, across giant slabs of granite with small clusters of trees here and there. After a few minutes, though, poor old Gerald got tired and needed a sit down. His legs were hurting and he needed a break. But Stacy would continue on. The hike was a short one after all. And Chris Grimes, the trail guide for the trip, was also there. And he looked up about 50 yards up the hill and saw what would become the last sighting of Stacy ever again. According to him, she was standing on a large boulder, was staring off into the distance, and then quite literally walked into the sunset with no trace or sight of Stacy to be found or seen ever again.
So they didn't even hit the mile and a half. They were on that mile and a half.
They were on that walk. Yep. And
she was just like, I'm going to finish it.
Yeah. She's like, the old man was going to stay. And so she was like, they agreed. And she's like, I'm going to keep going. And the trip guide was also there too. And he saw her standing on top of the hill on a boulder. She walked into the sunset. And then when she was never to be found. From there, a massive search for Stacy began that would last 9 days, over 8,000 man hours, 57 hours of helicopter search time, and 4 separate agencies to pile on the case, and not one single clue about where Stacy went or ended up ever turned up. The search cost them in total $99,845 in 1981. So
that's quite a bit of money. Yeah.
Yeah, that's quite a bit of money today. At this point, it's really important to mention that this is where the weird stuff comes up. It's important to mention that David, the Paul Eads, or Paul Ides, the author of the book, reached out countless times during his research to the NPS, the National, I think, Protection Services, for records on missing people, and they always provided the files he asked for, which is legally allowed under the Freedom of Information Act, which states that the Freedom of Information Act, for those who don't know, is a federal freedom of information law that requires the full or partial disclosure of previously unreleased information and documents controlled by the United States government upon request. The act defines agency records subject to disclosure, outlines mandatory disclosure procedures, and defines 9 exemptions to the statute. This was signed in Lyndon B. Johnson back in 1966. I'm just going to go through it a little bit more so people fully understand kind of the depths of all this. As indicated by its long title, the FOIA was actually extracted from its original home in Section 3 of the Administrative Procedure Act, and then was kind of made its own thing. The amendment required agencies to publish their rules of procedure in the Federal Registrar and to make available for public inspection and copying their opinions, statements of policy, interpretations, and staff manuals and instructions that are not already published in the Federal Registrar. In addition, it requires every agency upon any request for records which reasonably describes such records to make such records promptly available to any person. If an agency improperly withholds any documents, the district court has jurisdiction to order their production. Unlike the review of other agency action that must be upheld if supported by substantial evidence and not arbitrary to capricious. I don't know what that word means. Capricious.
Capricious.
Yeah, there you go. I can't read it. So that's important. So there, according to the Freedom of Information Act, anyone in the country can request files. They have to go through a procedure, but they can make them public to the person.
This is basically, just in case you are like not a big listener of like crime podcasts and, you know, Netflix stuff, the FOIA is like the reason those things exist.
Yep, exactly. So that's, it's important for when, you know, doing research on things like this, especially. So the reason this matters and the reason this is important is because, much like he had in many other cases, he reached out and requested the files on Stacy. But before he even got any official response from the government, he was called by a special agent of the National Park Services by the name of Special Agent Yu from Yosemite, and asked, who then proceeded to ask him a bunch of questions. Why was David requesting this case? That he told him that he was never going to get the file ever. When presented with the fact that he was already handling multiple cases that he had files on, and he had done this many times in the past, Agent Yu simply said that he didn't believe him. He then urged Agent Yu to call the FOIA administration in Denver. Charis Wilson was the name of the person he requested him to call to confirm that he was saying is accurate. And the agent merely replied, saying that there were no suspects in the case of her disappearance. The case is still classified as missing persons, and there were no leads, and there is no apparent sign that the classification will change in the near future. But that was important because he just confirmed to David that she was classified as a missing persons case. So David then went on to say that she wasn't listed in the National Center of Missing and Exploited Children, and he once again was told that he didn't believe him. He would then go on to be fully denied the case files. He would try again in 2011 and would be denied again. 30 years later, at this point, she is still missing. Nobody has ever found her. And David continued to search in the area and found that between the years of 1968 and 1988, four people, including Stacy, went missing, all within 3 miles of where Stacy originally went missing, never to be found. Only one body of a man was ever found stuck in granite slats, but it was impossible to identify who this person was because of the age of the body. And to this day, Stacy is still missing, and the case has never been released.
Interesting.
So it's that little tidbit of information for me that made this case jump out. The fact that she literally walked and then no anything was ever found of her, period.
What agency is Agent Yu supposed to be with?
The National Park Services.
You know what's crazy? If you just type in her name in Google, the very first thing that pops up is a nationalparkservice.gov website that lists... It has photos from the search,
mm-hmm.
and then if you keep scrolling down, it shows a photo of her that is prom, and then you keep going down, it has all the articles about her being missing. She's still, at least on here, it has all this information about her being missing, and then all the people who went to go look for her, and all the man hours put in.
Yep. There's a picture of her here, too. That's her, like,
fascinating. That's the same picture that's on this website.
Okay, same picture.
But this is legit, like, nps.gov. This is straight up a government website with all... It's a PDF of all of her information.
Now, keep in mind, if information has come out since writing this book, I don't think there has any new information that's popped out.
No, it's not saying anything new. It just has... If people are curious, it literally has all of this information about the search and about her. Weird. But, yeah, notice it doesn't... Like, the previous one, it was... shortly after in December, they found poop with body parts in it. This is just like, here's photos and stuff, which makes it even weirder. Yeah. I like this one. This one is creepy. I like this.
So the other people that were missing in the area, let me give you that little bit more tidbit of information. Missing people in the area, Stacy Aris disappeared in timeline. September 8th, 1968 in Tenaya Park, two off-duty San Jose police officers found a man's body in a crevasse. The body was never identified. Tenaya Peak is approximately 1 mile directly north of Sunrise Lakes, where Stacy disappeared. May 25th, 1976, Snow Creek Trail. En route to May Lake, Jeff Estes disappears. On a map, you could draw a straight line through Sunrise Lake, Tenaya Lake, and May Lake, each almost equally distant apart, approximately 1.5 miles. July 17th, 1981, Stacy Ann disappears, which is Stacy Ann Aras disappears, which we just walked to. And then this one, Then July 15th, 1988, Murphy Creek Trail. The Murphy Creek Trail starts at Tenaya Lake and goes northeast a half a mile to Polly Dom Lake. Timothy Barnes disappears. Each of the four above incidents occurred in proximity to each other. Each incident has its own bizarre and unexplainable story. How can a body be found in the middle of a national park and never be identified? How did the man get there? Where did he come from? Where is the camping equipment, backpack, and supplies that Jeff Estes and Timothy Barnes were carrying? How can a search party encompassing 8,000 hours of work not find a trace of a 14-year-old girl and, moreover, find the body that they apparently found a few years later? Missing in an area largely of exposed granite with limited tree coverage. The incidents listed above had 5 to 8 years between each occurrence. Three of the four incidents involved white male adults. Two of the incidents happened in mid-July, almost to the date. Again, the NPS wanted to charge him over $30,000 for a list of missing people inside Yosemite National Park. The idea that these are the only missing people in this area would not be accurate. It was an extensive periodical search that produced these results, and there are others. Stacey Aris, Timothy Barnes, and Jeff Estes did not disappear. Human beings cannot disappear. They are probably somewhere inside that park. Why are we giving up the search when we know exactly where they all disappeared?
Maybe right before she crested the hill and disappeared, right after that, like a puma came and bodied.
Just like whoop, yeah. Goodbye.
Football player.
I mean, again, that's obviously possible. It's so interesting because when you have cases where there's just no evidence, anything is possible, right?
I'm trying to think of like why somebody would act this way and it not be shady. And I can't really think of one other than that maybe what happened is like, you know, where is this? Like Kings Canyon kind of area, basically, like kind of a rural area, small police department. I wonder if maybe there was never a case filed. I wonder if you know, maybe they're just embarrassed about it or something because, well, you know, if they really found no evidence at all,
and they really
found not anything that they're linking to the case, maybe they just never did it and they don't want to be put on blast about not ever doing it.
I mean, she's definitely 100% on the State of California Department of Justice website as a missing person. You can look her up. Stacey Ann Aris, whatever her last name is. It is her missing. It says that she is currently a missing person. You're contacting the Yosemite National Park Service. Has a case number. Has all the last information in a photo. It's a terrible old photo, but like,
it's the only one they've got. Yeah.
So there is there. So a case file does exist. We just can't have it.
Well, I think.
I think there's the public case file, and then there's probably like the more detailed one, I would imagine.
Be real. This may be one of those things where we just assume the government knows everything, and I have a feeling that they might not know anything. This could be like one of those things where they just are like, yeah, we don't know. Whatever reason. Because if she vanishes in the woods, it's not like you can be like, all right, well, what are the suspects? Who killed her? If she's gone, like, what do you even do? What do you say?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, most of the time when they go missing, I think the go-to explanation is run in with the wilderness, obviously.
Sure.
But, when you've got nothing, like, what do you do, man?
Yeah, because they found no evidence of her at all.
That's the weird stuff. My bookmark fell out. I had a third case that I wanted to read to you boys, but now I lost the page.
I wonder why this one is like, do people like investigate this? Like, is there like a subreddit?
Yeah. Oh, there's a missing 411 subreddit. Yep.
I mean, specifically for Stacy.
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question. There was one for the boy from 2 weeks ago that we talked about because there was, you know, people trying to be like internet sleuths and trying to figure out if the parents killed the kid. But I have no idea if there's one for her.
Man, that is absolutely insane.
I found it. Thank God. Yeah, man. Yeah. Those are the ones that drive me nuts. Because there's no evidence. And the last case we're going to talk about today is also going to be a no evidence case. this one is about a woman by the name of Rosemary Teresa Kunst, if you want to, you know, type the name in case. She was 70 years old when she ended up disappearing. But let's talk a little bit about who Rosemary was first. Rosemary was born on November 1st, 1929. The next 69 years, hell yeah, were very productive and successful for dear... What?
It's hell a good number. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
There's something wrong with that?
Hell yeah.
In 1950, what? Rosemary married, got married to a man by the name of Charles Bud Kunst. And Bud is like his fake nickname, you know, because in quotes. They had 6 children and 11 grandchildren in their time together. And the couple was active and enjoyed the outdoors often. Rosemary was a licensed marriage and family counselor in their hometown of San Anselmo, California. Now, I don't know where that is, but maybe you do. But it sounds like it's a coastal city. But I don't know. In 1998, the life of Rosemary and Bud would get derailed. The couple was involved in a horrific car accident that took the life of Bud and nearly killed Rosemary. After months of recuperation and struggle, Rosemary came back and started to have the same energy level she did before the accident. Rosemary struggled with the loss of her husband and searched for a method to reach Bud's spirit, as you do when you get desperate. I mean, it happens. We've seen so many people who lose their spouses and they turn to, you know, Ouija boards and seances and stuff in a desperate attempt. I mean, that was really big in the 40s, right? Like the 30s and 40s, seances were massive.
Yeah, like Houdini times.
Yeah, Houdini times. So this is a precedent for it. But she decided that in searching for Bud's spirit, to take a backpacking trip with the Earth Circle organization in Reka, California. Y-R-E-K-A, for those who want to look it up. Operated by Karuk chief and elder Charlie Red Hawk Tom. Every year, the Earth Circle organization went to the remote location of Spirit Lake in the Marble Mountain Wilderness area, just west of Mount Shasta, California. Red Hawk had built an altar at the lake, and every year he had a religious retreat that included a calling to the gods and a spirit dance. There were drums, singing, and dancing, all to bring the spirits awake and alive at the lake. The lake sits at the base of a small bowl that would remind you of a mini volcano. There's only one way in and one way out. There is a side of the lake that drains into Woolly Creek. The area had an approximately 70-degree fall, which is nearly impossible to climb. There are large trees in a portion of the bowl with significant ground coverage. Rosemary read that there would be a group of approximately 11 people, including a cook, Red Hawk, and possibly his son. They would bring the food and tents into the area on horseback. It was a rigorous hike to the location, and it was remote. After reading about the trip and talking with organizers, Rosemary felt that this would be a good event for her. Rosemary was in excellent spirits as she headed off for the trip, according to her family and friends. After being at the lake and establishing camp, Red Hawk had his ceremonial spirit dance and song after dinner on August 17th, the year 2000. The entire group participated and attempted to call spirits into the area and address their concerns. I imagine it didn't go well. On August 18th at 9 a.m., Red Hawk informed the group they were going to take a day hike to a nearby lake and they would be back for dinner. Rosemary felt that she wanted to stay behind and enjoy the absolute beauty of Spirit Lake. The group left, and Rosemary asked Red Hawk's 12-year-old son, Chalet, if he wanted to hike with her to the other side of the lake, a location that hadn't been explored. Chalet said he would stay behind with the camp cook. Rosemary asked for a small bagged lunch to take with her, and the cook prepared it, and Rosemary walked to the other side of the lake near the outflow to Woolly Creek. At 5 p.m., the group with Red Hawk ended up returning to the camp from their day hike and realized Rosemary hadn't returned from her walk yet. A group was sent to get Rosemary, but after approximately 1 hour, they returned and stated that they couldn't find her. It was at this point that a decision was made to contact the Siskiyou, a county search and rescue, and declare an emergency. Within 24 hours, there were nearly 50 researchers actively looking for Rosemary. Her family was notified and were en route to San Anselmo. Through an archive search, David found that the SAR commander of Rosemary's incident, remember SAR stands for Search and Rescue Group, was someone by the name of Grizz Adams, which
Hell
is
yeah.
a fucking dope name. Real life Grizzly Adams. That's so good. Grizz stated that from the very beginning of this case, he had a few very unnerving issues surrounding the disappearance. The first issue was that the south end of the lake where Rosemary disappeared did not have a path where a 70-year-old woman could walk out of the lake basin. If she wanted to leave the lake, she would have had to walk by the cook and chalet, which was the kid, which she never ended up doing. Another major issue was Rosemary's age. People confirmed that she was in excellent shape, but even a 25-year-old in excellent shape isn't going to exit Spirit Lake through the south exit without ropes and climbing gear because of just the way it's all set up. Grizz explained that the Marble Mountain Wilderness area has split jurisdiction, and this disappearance was in Siskiyou County. He enlisted the assistance of several county SAR teams, a National Guard FLIR-equipped helicopter, a California Highway Patrol helicopter, canines equipped to track scent and find cadavers, ground searchers, and searchers on horseback, to give you an idea of the immense effort that went into looking for Rosemary. Yeah. As we, what was that?
I'm just saying,
okay, gotcha. As we talked about, as the two of them, rather, talked about successes and failures of this search in particular, it quickly became apparent that there were far more failures than successes. Grizz explained that the canines could never pick up Rosemary's scent, which he thought was highly unusual since they knew exactly where she was headed and where she had walked. The cadaver canines never picked up any human scent. When asked about mountain lions and bears, Grizz stated mountain lions and bears are common in the marbles, but attacks are almost unheard of, but not impossible. He further stated that if there had been a bear or mountain lion attack, there would be a defined location of the attack with blood and a scene defined by a fight for someone's life. Nothing like this was ever found. They did, however, find one tuft of hair under a bush approximately a half mile from the south end of Spirit Lake. The hair was never DNA tested, and to this day, we still don't know if the this hair belonged to Rosemary.
Really?
Yeah. To this day, up to the point that it was written in the book.
Why wouldn't they test that hair?
Fuck if I know, man. I don't know. That's what, every time I read one of these cases, and there's something like the Royal Mounted Police, the first initial search was a quick flyby and nothing else, or they, you know, it took them a week to send people in, but, you know, there was no good reason, the weather was fine. That's where, and like a tuft of hair, why would you not send that in to get tested? I don't understand.
I would just love to talk to one of these people about this type of thing, one of the, like, park ranger people, and just be like, how likely is it that you're going to find any information about these people? Like, are you like so desensitized to it because you're like, oh, they're gone, they're dead?
But this is, you have to keep in mind too, this area, this lake that we're in, there was only one way in and one way out. There was only like, there's a limited area where she could have gone, and they never found her. This was the only evidence. That tuft of hair was the only evidence they ever found. Her lunch and her lunch bag were also never found. Grizz confirmed that Rosemary's children were at the search and headquarters, and they made the decision to terminate the effort after they had no other places to search. Grizz stated that there are two incidents in his 35-plus year career that will forever bother him. The disappearances of Rosemary Kunst and another by the name of Carl Landers, which maybe one day we can talk about his disappearance, but we don't have the time to cover everybody that I find interesting. He said in both incidents, canines never picked up a scent, not one piece of evidence was ever found, and they knew where the people disappeared, but found nothing in the area.
And I don't think it was planned, because she told that kid to go with her.
Yes, that's actually brought up later, too, is that, you know, when asked about suicidal, then the point is, why would she ask a kid to come with her if she was going to wander into the woods and go die, you know? David did actually end up hunting down the chief that was on that trip, but he had a difficult time finding him. But he did find Karuk Chief Charlie Tom, but eventually found where he found out where he lived and stopped by his house for a spur of the moment interview. Chief Tom was very polite, was initially a little apprehensive. I chalked that up to probably a spur of the moment arrival at a house to have a conversation about something that happened a decade ago. But he was a little apprehensive about discussing the incident. Once he understood that that David already had considerable knowledge of the situation, he started to talk.
Right.
He confirmed that they did conduct a spirit dance at this altar the night before Rosemary disappeared. He stated that he believes that Rosemary somehow got to a location called Devil's Back Canyon. He never completely explained why he thought she disappeared in that canyon, but he was fairly sure that is where she went. He had no idea why she would have left the safety of Spirit Lake.
Wait, why does he say that?
He never says why he says that. He never elaborates further.
And who is he again to her?
He was the guy that performed the dance ritual. He was the chief of the tribe that they all went out to. He was the one that led the walk the day she disappeared. Red Hawk.
But she wasn't on that walk.
Right. She did not go on that walk.
Yeah. What the fuck? That's so weird.
Like another one that just a disappearance with no evidence.
Except maybe her hair.
Maybe her hair, which never got fucking tested.
This is frustrating. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if these are all one thing.
Right. Well, that's obviously the point of the book, is like they're all similar in some way. There's always threads of similarities between them. But at the same time, you know, in a logical mind, you know, David talks about how many cases he goes through. there's so many people that go miss. Thousands of people go missing every year. Like, it's possible that he's, you know, he's got that confirmation bias. If he's seeing a pattern where there might
he's
not
like,
be a
yep,
pattern.
There's another one.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Sorry. I have my mind blown. Can you confirm, just really quickly again, what is the name of this person who went missing?
Rosemary Kunst. Kunst.
God, all right.
Oh, boy.
Never mind. I thought things got really effing crazy. Wow. All right. Apparently, there is someone else who got lost in a forest named Rosemary Gullet. And her story ends with her reappearing on Facebook in a weird apartment. And her mom freaked out and was like, what? So, yeah. All right. Never mind. I almost was like, did we just stumble on something? No, it was not even the same person.
Damn. Okay. That would have been insane, though.
Yeah.
I'm curious. What forest did she go missing? West Coast, East Coast? Because I'm curious.
Oh,
if
I just closed the page because
this
is dumb. So I don't.
Yeah, I don't need this anymore. I don't need this at all. And you know, like just to kind of add interesting, you know, tidbits. There's probably a good 100 cases in this book where it's literally a paragraph because when he reaches out to get the files from the people, he's denied.
He just has to be.
I
like,
wonder.
Yep.
That's right, and that he's left wondering too. He doesn't. What I appreciate is he doesn't posit why he's being denied. He's just like, it's weird that I'm being denied. He's being contacted occasionally by individual agents asking questions like, why are you looking at this case? And that's the stuff that throws red flags up for me as somebody who just is interested in this stuff. Why turn him down?
Maybe they don't like him anymore because they know he's like writing books and stuff. But like,
it's possible,
I don't know.
Like,
it seems like they would speak out against him if they really had a problem with what he was doing.
Like, here's a simple little thing. Like, Ruth Alice Jacobs, she was 76 when she disappeared. Amador County, California, disappeared in 1989. Facts surrounding the disappearance of Ruth Jacobus are few. Investigators believe that Ruth wandered away from her remote home and got lost in the wilderness. Could be, obviously, like, dementia or something if she suffered from it, but they said she didn't. Family members and friends said she didn't suffer from anything. The area around the home has steep and rugged mountains that make hiking the area treacherous. She was last seen by her husband near noon. A search by the sheriff could not find Ruth, and I was denied any of the missing persons files by the government.
So, I'm fascinated by this whole... Because the government is the way the government is, it breeds the...
Conspiracy.
The conspiracy and the mythos, like they're hiding something. But... I just went on ProPublica because I guess they have an article about people trying to get information requests.
Ooh, cool.
And this guy was they have a bunch of different journalists on here. Many, many of them are a part of this article, and they give examples. And so this one guy reached out because I guess there was a New York City regulator thing about taxes. And this guy was like, okay, this dude gave me a tip. I have an inside guy. I just need to find these several pieces of information, and he sent the government very descriptive things, so they couldn't come back with him and be like, no, sorry, you know, it would take too long to find this, or we don't know what this is, or whatever. And they still came back with stuff that was like, yeah, you didn't really adequately describe the records you seek.
Yes, that happened.
And he's like, that's not true. Yeah, he was like, that's not true. I gave them all these different things. I appealed everything, and they were like, yeah, sorry, we don't have that information that you requested. And he's just like, what? No, you definitely do. And so the article also hints on the fact that maybe because government agencies like this are very, very understaffed, that they just don't, like,
they're just
want
like
to.
Being like, lazy, no.
Yeah, maybe. And that just breeds more conspiracy. Who knows? But yeah, I agree. It's weird that they wouldn't just be like, all right, we'll look into it.
At least just give me some lip service. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
right?
And it's so weird that in like I said, multiple accounts. Now, of course, this is all just by David's you know, mouth, that he gets contacted by agents asking questions before he ever gets a formal response. Like, they actually reach out and call him and be like, what do you want these files for? No, you're not going to get them. Like, stop trying to look into this case. And that, of course, also breeds conspiracy.
It's not a good look, U.S. government.
Yeah, it's so weird. It's so weird, man. And this has been like... This has been my life for like the past month. I've just these missing cases, and it just makes me afraid to go into the woods.
I gotta watch this movie.
The documentary, by the way, not only is it on Amazon Prime, it's also on Hulu. I was informed as well, so you can go watch it on Hulu too.
Nice.
Yeah, like going back to this article, literally everyone on here, this one guy sends them information request after information request, doing everything they say, getting more and more specific about exactly what he needs without giving up his sources and without being like, oh yeah, I need this article, right? Without doing any, literally they're just like, no. At the very, very end, they're like, we decided not to. After going through every hoop. Like, that's crazy to me.
It's insane. That's why I'm just like, Missing 411, we could do a million episodes on this, and we will absolutely revisit Missing 411 in the future, for sure, but because there's some interesting shit to talk about.
I'm waiting for the moment. See, look, this is all great for weird mysteries, but where's the moment where we finally transition to the fact that, like, oh, well, it's because there's a gateway to another reality in the national parks?
See, if I was to think, because there's so many different... those theories usually line up with the ones where they went this way and they ended up like they found their body in the exact opposite direction. And that's right. Where people like step through. We could do some, if you want to do another one in 2 weeks, I'll pick those out. You know what I mean?
What's the general theory of relativity behind all this?
The most accepted conspiracy, you think?
Well, or most grand, right?
There's
got to be a reason why you write a book with all these mysteries, like mysterious disappearances in it. And then at the very end, you're like, because it's the Bermuda Triangle. Well, right? What's the thing?
He doesn't have a thing. He leaves it out. He's more presenting things than he is trying to come to a conclusion. So there's no presentation. However, if you're talking to me and you want to know my theory, if I was to go grandiose theory, The only thing that makes the most sense with what we have is government involvement. The government picking people.
And just taking them.
And just whether they're experimenting on them or you know, trying programs out on them or whatever you want to call it, running tests on them, whatever. I mean, that's where my mind would go. Maybe a few of them are, there's so many missing peoples. I'm sure a few of them are alien abductions if you believe that sort of thing. But the where the missing peoples tend to happen the most, where when he's talking about these specific circumstances, as I showed you boys in the DM over the past couple of weeks, that's where it lines up with quote-unquote hidden potential CIA bases and stuff that's out there. So that's where my brain would go. I would think, like, the most plausible outside of either suicidal people that can be written off that way, wild animal attacks with just a little bit of evidence, people who are literally going missing completely with no evidence, and the government's like, no, you can't have any files. My brain's like, oh, okay, maybe.
I can 100% see the conspiracy behind it because it lines up perfectly. Like, oh, well, this guy went out to an unknown area, and he went there. The people were like, don't go there. There's nothing out there. You want to fish over here. And then he goes out there, and then suddenly he's dead. Weird. Or like she walked into the sunset and then was gone, but there were people there. What happened to her, man? Like, I get it.
Yeah.
It's crazy, but I can understand where you can easily slip in, like, a pseudoscience and be like, oh, of course, this is what happened.
Yes.
Aliens.
Well, talked about a little earlier, it's like the problem with these disappearances is that so many of them leave so little evidence, any conspiracy theory can fit it. It's such a broad puzzle piece.
I'm going to go with the old scary tree people from The X-Files.
Oh, I thought you meant treants from Lord of the Rings. Like, hurumph.
No. I'm talking about that episode of The X-Files where there's those invisible people in the woods that make people disappear. I feel like it's got to be like
Missing 411.
I think it's got to be inspired by this exact thing. But it's literally like, I believe they find like a cave and it has like Latin written in it. And Mulder's like, oh, these could be like settlers from Europe that found something unspeakable.
Or Lord of the Rings treants.
Yeah.
Master Hobbit. Slowly.
I don't know. I'm less willing to accept it being a conspiracy and more willing to accept it being like some type of weird thing that we don't know about.
Yeah. Yeah, fair. Whether it be just, are you saying like more, it's more along the lines of something like a cryptid
or like something like, you know, that
you're thinking a normal animal couldn't just kill these people. It has to be like the chupacabra.
It doesn't have to
be like a wolf.
No, I just mean like, you know, like when it gets really cold and you take your clothes off, that type of thing.
Yeah, the paradoxical undressing.
Yeah, I wonder if there's something that could happen, like, you know, what if there's, like, a frequency that, like, rumbles out of the earth in remote areas that makes you want to kill yourself? Random
stories, but there's another weird story in here about a three-year-old that goes missing and is found a few days later alive. She doesn't die. And the only thing she remembers and the only thing she tells people is that it was always sunny where she was and that grandma was there, but she was, whenever she got mad, she would start to spark and she would apparently ask the three-year-old to poop into a bag for her.
What?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Why didn't we do that story?
Because
that's the story.
There's your story. But that's, there you go. There's your story. There's no other information.
It's based on the testimony of
a three-year-old.
Of a toddler, yeah.
Yeah. Where she ended up was uphill, like by 3 miles uphill, and it would have been very difficult for a three-year-old to spend days climbing uphill for, you know, X number of miles. But beyond that, that's literally, it's like a paragraph. Like, that's it.
That's a fascinating story.
It was
the word, like the verbiage. Grandma was sparking.
Yeah, like a robot.
And she made her poop in a bag.
Yeah, like, she never did. Like every time she said no, the grandma got mad, and then she started to spark around her neck.
Do you have what? This name, this girl?
I can find it if you give me some time. I have to find it.
Okay, I would love to know the name of that girl. Tweet that girl's name.
Tweet it out. I will, if you guys want me to get you the name at a post, I will definitely get it for you. It's in here somewhere.
Yeah, or toss it on the subreddit.
Yeah, there's some wild, wild, weird stories, man. But a lot of the most interesting ones are super short. Like, there's a paragraph because they get found alive. And they're, you know, you're relying, like you said, on the testimony of, like, a 3 or 4 or 5-year-old, which is not reliable, to say the least.
So what is on the horizon for Chilluminati?
Well, I was thinking of doing something super fun, super lighthearted. I had just been made aware, and I think you boys had been made aware too, of a man who claimed to have killed 18 greys with a katana.
Yes.
Whoa, yeah. All right.
I'd love to talk about, specifically, there's another man I would love to talk about, but I want to talk about, instead of the killing of greys, there are loads of people who have stories about sexual encounters with the greys. And there is a nice man that he's frequently visited by a female grey, and he paints the scenarios in which he has sex with the greys. And the paintings are always him with this, like, female-looking grey, and then a bunch of, like, regular small-looking greys standing around as, like, the female grey rides him.
Hell yeah.
I want to talk about that crazy shit.
I would love to get into that.
As far as people are also requesting another Alex episode, but I know you take your time with your research and you like to go real deep into certain weird holes.
Yeah, so. I'll probably find like one or two things that we can do quick pretty soon. I'm like, I've been like doing that a little bit more lately.
Yeah,
I've been heavily like busy with the writing right now, but
fair.
When I'm done with that, I'm going to churn out a couple Crazy Town ones. I'm looking at right now, things I'm looking at are like the Baron Trump thing, which is, you know, not
right,
as
wild, but weird.
It's not as deep as I'd like it to be.
It's not.
There's also QAnon. There's a lot of different things that I'm looking into. I'll probably come up with something that I haven't even mentioned, but we'll see what happens.
And I have a couple of my researchers working on the background, our next serial killer case, just to talk. I want to hit the big hitters and just talk about how shitty they are as people. Especially with the recent, you know, I've seen a lot of people talk about the romanticization of Ted Bundy, with the movies that come out and make like what an amazing person he is. Ted Bundy,
he's hot and stuff.
Here's the thing. Like, we're going to cover Ted Bundy one day, and Ted Bundy is far from hot. He is on his best day, average looking, regularly a crazed, insane psychopath.
People like him because he's mysterious and he's a murderer.
Well, it's that whole idea, right, that serial killers, you know, everybody expects serial killers to look like the monsters that they are, and they never do because they're people. They're just people. So people, when they see Ted Bundy, he's like just an average-looking nobody. People are like, oh my God, he's hot. It's like, no, he's not hot, you idiots.
Yeah, I really don't get that.
Me either. I hate it. He's a piece of shit who was an empty husk of a human being who could do nothing to make himself feel normal, so he just became a despicable monster. And we'll talk about the reality of Ted Bundy one day. Beyond that, that's what I've got for you. 3 cases, handpicked by yours truly. I hope you guys enjoyed those cases.
Delightful. Guys, uh-huh. Buy our clothes. Buy the things that we have available.
We're going to be seeing a new attire soon. We're looking, I reached out to the Yeti, and we're talking about getting a hoodie. People Ooh. Have been desperate for hoodies up on Chilluminati.
Right? All you so twisted paranormal people walking around the rolling. Streets.
Hell yeah, dude. Represent. Your glowing hoodies. You know what I mean? Get those glowing hoodies. Let people know about the podcast. We are still like on knocking on the door of 700 five-star reviews on iTunes. So drop us the reviews if you love what we do. And as always, if you want to talk to us directly, you can. I'm Matt This Game's on Twitter. Jesse Cox is his namesake on Twitter. And Alex is his namesake with Fatsian AA.
Yeah, find me. Find That's me out good there. Stuff.
And the subreddit is dope. Go check out the subreddit. Yeah.
Please tweet me your crazy bullshit. Post your crazy bullshit. Please.
I think that's it. Jesse, you got something? You look like you want to say something.
No, post your crazy bullshit. I want the I want more stories that are like, and then grandma sparked her neck and told me to poop in a bag. That's what I want. I want more of that. That's crazy. I love that
stuff.
If
you're a missing 411 person that went missing and came back.
If Mulder is I want to believe, Jesse is I want to believe.
Yeah, I want to believe, kind of. Yeah, I want you to blow my mind. I want, like, and then I took this photo of grandma pooping in a bag, and I was like, well, you've been dead years, granny. I want that. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it for us for this episode of Chilluminati. You're right, Alex? You look like you're just exhausted.
I'm looking at my list of topics that I've been, like, slowly compiling research on. And I'm laughing at myself. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, my pile of research is mostly alien focused. I'm reading a couple alien books right now, so I'm excited to talk about that stuff again. But I really, before we do any serious alien stuff, I really want to talk about the dude who bangs aliens and paints them.
I can't wait to hear more about this guy.
Oh, it's great. It's so good. But that will wrap it up for us today. This has been a Chilluminati Podcast, episode 24. We love you guys. And
Peace out.
See you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.